There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on.
What
do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to the Local Journalism Initiative Roundup here on CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm your host, Jules Bigel, live in studio here with you today. And you're going to be hearing all the stories I've been working on at the station with the support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Now, you may be able to hear this, but I'm a little bit under the weather, so that's going to be fewer stories than usual. But we've always got stuff from our archives to keep you listening throughout the whole hour. We've got stories coming from a landlord who has attempted an eviction in Verdun for social housing. The only problem, Montreal's housing office says there's no agreement of the sort on the books. We hear from the tenants, their housing committee, and their member of National Assembly. Last night, dozens of Montrealers partied outside of where City Council was meeting in the Old Port. The city has cut funding to nightlife group Montreal 2424, who organized the Nightlife Council and Summit, among other initiatives. And Montreal's Centaur Theatre has received millions in government funding, which will go toward the building's modernization, a win for this historic Anglophone theater, and much, much more to come. Before we get to all that, though, I just want to shout out that we are hosting a news workshop this Thursday at 5 p.m. at the station. That's for anybody who's ever been interested in producing community news here at CKUT. We've got a long tradition of grassroots news, and our news collective has just been restarted by volunteer Sequoia Kim. So come down to the station where Jack, our spoken word coordinator, and I are going to be showing you the basics of producing news at the station and telling you more about the history of that practice. So that's this Thursday at 5 p.m. All right, now here is our show. You're listening to CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm Jules Bigel. It's every tenant's worst nightmare. You open up your letterbox or your inbox to find a notice that says you're being evicted. That's what happened to the tenants of a Verdun fourplex on December 30th.
Well, the notice told us that we needed to leave at the end of June, and it was an eviction notice. So it was pretty hard to take because it was just before, you know, New Year's Eve, and we thought it was pretty fishy, like the way it was written, and we right away we talked to each other and decided that we needed to take action because it didn't feel right.
What was so strange was the reason given for the eviction. Here's Kay Lockyer from the Citizen Action Committee of Verdun, which has been supporting the tenants in their appeal.
They received what is basically a standard notice of eviction, and what the box that was checked off on this notice was for change of use, in French, changement d'affectation. And the specific reason that was cited on this notice was that the landlord was going to be turning the units into social housing that was subsidized by the OMHM, our municipal housing office here in Montreal, under a program that doesn't have a name in English, the Programme Subvention Loyer. It's basically like subsidized housing, but semi-private, semi-public. Like a private landlord has to have an agreement with the OMHM to operate this type of housing. There was no such agreement. But I think what really alerted them that something was off was that the landlord told them to sign up themselves for social housing, that they should get on the waiting list. And also these people, many of the tenants in the building qualify for social housing. They meet the criteria. So they just right off the bat said this doesn't make sense. it doesn't make sense that I would be evicted from my apartment for social housing when I myself could be a recipient of social housing. Why, you know, if you were turning this actually into a PSL, why wouldn't I have priority and right to occupancy?
The thing is, we're all in a very like vulnerable situation financially. And when we received the notice, it said that they were going to put people in need instead of us that are already in a situation where we also are not like fortunate enough to go live somewhere else. So that's kind of the irony. So that's why we're like, no, we have to fight this.
It was pretty weird, and it was a changement d'affectation under the name of an organization that just produced like affordable units. And it felt wrong because, like Roxane said, the rent every single month is a good price for us. It's like already affordable, and we're not going to be able to find another apartment in Verdun. The last few years it went up so high in prices, so it's just like it felt wrong. Yeah.
Despite being working parents, the tenants got together and got organized, contacting the CACV, the Quebec Housing Tribunal, and their member of National Assembly, Quebec Solidaire's Alejandra Zacamendes. She was able to confirm with the OMHM that there was no rent subsidy agreement for their building.
I was pissed. I mean, when I heard about the situation, the first thing that came to our mind was, is this true, right? We were really frustrated. Every eviction for us, it's a challenge. And then when we look at the information in the eviction notice, and then we went to the Office Municipal Habitation de Montréal, and they confirmed us that it's not true, that what it said in that notice is a lie, because there's no contract, there's no program with the contractor, there's nothing. And so that proved us that he's using an illegal notice.
Zacamendes says she also learned this isn't the only time this type of false eviction has been tried. She says the way evictions are handled needs to change.
It's always on the tenant shoulders to prove the how it works. And for us, what's important is that we need to better define how we define evictions, and it has to be the Tribunal Administratif du Logement that allows for an eviction or not at the beginning, not after the emission notice is given.
The way that we do evictions in this province is extremely flawed. A landlord can serve these eviction notices without having any kind of permits they don't have to have any proof that they have a deal to operate social housing, for example, and that this eviction is on legitimate grounds. They just have to serve these eviction notices. So if these tenants hadn't have been so proactive, and if they hadn't have informed themselves about their rights and gone to the proper resources, they could have easily have accepted the eviction. And I don't know where they would be. They could have signed, and they'd be in a very tricky spot.
Instead, after organizing and speaking to the media, these tenants will get to keep their apartments. Landlord Alex Lepage reportedly said the notices were in error, and he won't be pursuing them any further. Now Dani and Roxane say they want others to learn from their example.
I want people to know that they can take action and defend their rights, and it's worth it. It's not easy, it's difficult, and but just don't leave your apartment without a fight, because it's really worth it. Even though you wait and you have a lot of phone calls to make and miss work, it's still gonna, you're still gonna save money and be able to stay in your neighborhood and not have to move fishy fashion, illegal fashion or something like that,
Yeah. And if you feel that it's a lot to take upon yourself, you can reach out. Like I said, we reach out to our neighborhood, committee, and that helped us a lot.
I'm Jules Pigel. Thanks for listening. Bright lights, loud music, warm clothes. The scene in the Old Port on Monday night had all the makings of a good rave. But the partiers were gathered outside the Lucien Saulnier building with another purpose, to show their support for a nightlife group whose budget was cut by the city councillors inside.
Oh, I got an email, a two-line email, saying that they could not accept our funding application because the nightlife policy was going in public consultation at the Economical the Commission of the Economical Development, and they were waiting for the results of the commission to set the priorities for the city. So that means that, you know...
By the time that's all finished, the city will have moved on to funding for 2025, says Mathieu Goldin. Goldin is the general director of Montreal 2424, a local hub for research engagement and events about Montreal's nightlife. It's an organization whose very existence is in danger unless the city changes course.
Tonight is a demonstration because the city decided to cut our funding. After 3 years of working with them, they decided that probably they knew better now than we do, and that they did not need us anymore. So they decided to cut our funding, and that means for us the cancellation of the Night Summit, the laying off of all our employees, and we have to stop the activities of the Night Council too. So it's basically a debt that they're wishing us.
That decision comes hot on the heels of the city's new nightlife strategy, which would see the Quartier Latin become a 24-hour zone. Goldin says the city's focused on extending alcohol sales when the issues facing nightlife are much larger.
Of course, it's a step back. I think right now the city thinks that they need to do is to open venues, bars later than 3 a.m. maybe in the Latin Quarter, and that's about it. That's their old vision. That the vision is selling booze after 3, and that's it. They don't seem to recognize the depth of the problems when it comes to zoning, to noise bylaws, to lack of affordability of nightlife for youth. So it's something that we need to do to act upon, and act upon it fast, because we're slowly becoming a Toronto that speaks French. So who's going to want to come here?
Christian Bonneau was one of those who came out on Monday to support Montreal 2424. He said the city's policy lacks vision.
Nightlife is important, so they're like, okay, we'll give a shot. So Montreal 24, they did a full mandate. Now the city is like, okay, we're going to come out with a policy. And the policy they came up with is what the old administration came up with. Oh, we're going to do Le Quartier Latin as... But if you go physically in the space, there's no real physical space. There's no building for that. So you're like, okay, how it's going to happen?
He said that any money the city spends on groups like Montreal 2424 pays dividends down the road in the strength of its nightlife and festival scene.
There should be really like more actor involved, you know. It's not just like the nightlife industry or the bar industry. No, it's all the industries, you know. I mean, if we want that as a culture to live and as an industry to flourish, because like I said at the beginning, you know, it does represent a lot of money. You know, it's millions of dollars every year. Jazz is part of that. Francophonie is part of that. You know, Oshiega is part of that. Picnic Electronic, Igloo Fest, like all those, you know, Mad Festival, Fashion and Design, all those art things. I mean, it drives the city. Montreal is known as a festival city. Like it's just a logic thing. But like you need people to organize, like so.
Inside the Lucien Saulnier building, Mayor Valérie Plante was asked about her commitment to the sector. Executive Committee President Luc Leboin countered.
On finance des projets, on finance pas des organismes.
We finance projects, we don't finance organizations, he said, adding.
Il y a eu plusieurs séances de travail pour qu'on arrive.
There were several working sessions so that we could develop a nightlife policy that seems to us interesting and ambitious, and that certainly aims to address many of your concerns. What does it take? It takes consultations in which stakeholders will be able to speak, as well as the entire Montreal population. All the organizations can give their opinion on what is essential and relevant in the policy, what is less so, but above all, what are the priority actions that we need to take in the short term, where we should start. The mayor's office did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Only time will tell how those consultations will go if the city is at odds with its nightlife sector. And the future of Montreal 2424 remains up in the air. I'm Jules Bijal. Thanks for listening.
Gem Art Center is pleased to present When Big Man Talk, the exhibit. Come experience a captivating fusion of paintings, photography, an immersive virtual reality experience and more. To kick off the exhibit, Jam Arts is presenting the film African Redemption, The Life and Legacy of Marcus Garvey, screening January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Maison de la Culture Côte des Neiges. Then experience When Big Men Talk, the exhibit, from February 3 to 10 at Galerie Lucie Michel, and after that from February 11 to 14 at the UNIA. For tickets, call 438-507-9258 or head to jam-montreal.com and click Jam Arts Center.
The governments of Canada and Quebec are supporting Montreal's Centaur Theatre to the tune of $6.2 million. That money will go toward the modernization of the long-running Anglophone Theatre, located in what was once Montreal's old and Canada's very first stock exchange. Here's Canadian Minister of Employment, Workforce Development, and Official Languages, Randy Boissonneau, speaking at the Old Port Theatre on Thursday.
What we're doing here today is announcing the Government of Canada's support of $2.2 million. And this funding, it comes from the Community Spaces Fund, which helps to renovate and upgrade multi-purpose community and cultural spaces that provide services and activities to official language minority communities. Spaces just like the Centaur Theatre.
Quebec is almost doubling that figure with $4 million in provincial funding. Éric Girard, Quebec Minister of Finance and Relations with English-speaking Quebecers, was also on hand to affirm the importance of the theatre to the province's artistic and anglophone communities.
Je suis vraiment content d'annoncer que le gouvernement du Québec accorde une subvention de 4 millions de dollars à l'établissement pour ses travaux de mise aux normes. Et je pense que nous sommes plusieurs à dire enfin, je sais que c'est un projet qui est très attendu par la communauté artistique et de Montréal anglophone. C'est un projet important.
The Centaur Theatre's impact was echoed by Minister Boissonneau, who shared his own experience visiting as a young man.
Friends, it was 1996 in this iconic theatre when I, as a young, queer, questioning guy who didn't really know who I was yet, stumbled upon Tony Kushner's Angels in America, Part One. Let me tell you, it helped with my journey. And now an openly gay, happy person, I can tell you that not just this theater, but Montreal has a special place in my heart, as a place you could come and just be yourself, et en tant que personne queer, et en tant que personne a francophone.
The new funding will help maintain the heritage building and improve its accessibility and safety. I'm Jules Bijal. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Angela Davis. You're listening to CKUT 90.3.
Angela, you're one of a million.
All right, we are back live in the station. This is Jules Bijal, your host of the local journalism edition of Roundup. That was the first time I've ever heard that Angela Davis station ID, and it like hit me right in the face. I hope you guys enjoyed that, as well as the stories that I've been working on this past week at the station. Now I'm going to share some of the pieces from a week ago. So if you notice that I talk about the dates, those will be referring to last Tuesday. They're from last Tuesday's show. First, we're going to have a piece about the huge rental increases we're seeing from the Tribunal Administratif de Logement's guidelines that they put out last Tuesday. I interviewed Cédric Dussault of the RECLAC. That's an umbrella organization of housing committees and groups in the province that fights for tenants' rights. And Cédric and I talk about what they have in store for the year of 2024, how housing is looking. One thing you don't hear about in that story is a big demo, a manif that's planned for February 3rd that is against the proposed Bill 31. So to find more info about that, you can go online. It's all over Instagram at the RECLAC account, but you can also go to their website as well. Now, here is my interview with Cédric Dussault. Today, Quebec's Housing Tribunal published its guidelines for rent increases across the province. The result is a whopping 4% base increase that could go as high as 6.6% for renters in the province. These numbers take into account various measures of inflation, but change depending on how your dwelling is heated, whether your landlord has undertaken major renos, or how high the property tax hikes were in your borough. It's also important to note that they're just guidelines, general guidelines, alongside a more detailed calculation that is available on the TAL's website. But are also the latest confirmation that rent prices are on the rise as the housing crisis rages in Quebec. Today, I spoke with the RECLAC's Cédric Dussault just before the announcement took place. We got into the nitty-gritty of what to do if you receive a notice of rent increase, as well as the state of housing more generally coming into 2024. Here's our conversation.
Cédric Dussault, spokesperson for the RECLAC, Regroupement des Comités Logement Association de Locataires du Québec. Well, the RECLAC is a provincial organization grouping. We're close to, a little bit more than 60 community groups throughout the province. All of those groups are defending the rights of tenants, either collectively or individually. So we are the provincial grouping of housing, local housing committees and tenants associations.
Yeah, and I know that you guys are in close communication with all the various member organizations. You know, with that in mind, we're in a new year, 2024, and I'm wondering if you could just set the scene. We've been hearing a lot over the past year and years about the housing crisis in Quebec, rising rents, rising evictions. What are you guys seeing as we enter a new year of housing in Quebec?
Well, 2023 has been a really tough year. It seems that we're seeing that every year, but unfortunately, it's getting worse and worse every year, and we're hitting new lows every year that's coming. So, unless something really important is done to answer the housing crisis, all the factors such as the explosion of rents, all the evictions, fraudulent evictions that are happening, unless we do something about that, it's going to continue getting worse, unfortunately. So last year, what we saw is a steep increase in the numbers of evictions. All the cases that were reported to our local housing committee, it has increased of 132% throughout the province. So that's more than double the numbers that we had in 2022. So the numbers were already quite high. So we're seeing a steep increase year over year in the numbers of eviction. Of course, the rents are still soaring to levels that are unsustainable for a vast majority of tenants. So unfortunately, that's probably what we're going to see in 2024, because just the early reports that we have from various local organizations is that this year there has been, again, a lot of eviction notice and a lot of already, even though it's just beginning, but already some tenants have received their rent increase notice, and already it's getting problematic because a lot of landlords try to impose a very steep rent increase. So 2024 is not announcing to be different from 2023. And especially that this year, the Bill 31 has not been adopted last year. So it may be adopted in the following weeks. So if it is adopted, it's going to be even more problematic for tenants.
Yeah, let's just talk about Bill 31. So it was kind of a surprise that it wasn't adopted before the end of 2023. This was the initial plan of the CAC government. It looks like, okay, the National Assembly is going to start up in action again at the end of the month. There's a big protest planned in early February against the bill, but it's likely that it'll pass early next month. The CAC has sort of billed this as, well, it's not really a measure against the housing crisis per se, but it will help. And their rationale from the housing minister seems to be that private market supply is the only way to fix the housing crisis, that lease transfers, which allow tenants to pass on their leases without breaking them, are a bad measure to keep rents low. And they also say that they've increased some protections around evictions, how much money you can get as a tenant if you are evicted. I think landlords have to demonstrate some kind of good faith in front of the tribunal. This is sort of the broad strokes of the bill. So they're saying, well, it's not just about the housing crisis, but it sort of fits in with their larger market-driven vision of how to fix it. And I want to hear from you, what are the tenants' views on this? How is it going to affect regular people who are renting throughout the province?
Yeah, well, this vision is terrible because, it's very concerning to still hear those arguments, like the housing crisis being a problem of the private housing supply, because first, that's the same thing we've been seeing in Quebec and in Canada for decades. We've been focusing on the private housing supply for 30 years, 40 years now, and to the effect that we are seeing now, which is a major housing crisis, probably the deepest housing crisis we have seen in this province. Repeating the same mistakes that we've been making for four decades is quite appalling when we see the effects this has on tenants. Let's remember that in Canada, we have a terrible track record on social housing. Quebec being one of the worst provinces in Canada, and we've been decreasing the funding on social housing in Quebec. In fact, we have cut the only provincial program that was allowing the funding of social housing. We're going in the wrong direction, and we're going in the wrong direction faster than before. So it's unless we really do something about the rent that have been exploding to really unheard levels in the recent years, and it's still accelerating, unless we do something about that, unless we do something to really address the problem of fraudulent eviction, because this will not be addressed by what's contained in Bill 31 in any way. It's not by increasing the compensation that you're going to act upon fraudulent eviction, because they're fraudulent anyway. So it's not going to address the problem, and we just may see the tip of the iceberg, unfortunately, on all the dramatic social consequences the housing crisis has. When we were looking at the numbers on homelessness that were published this fall, it showed that the homelessness numbers have increased a lot, and it also showed that the first factor that is leading to homelessness is now being evicted from your apartment. So it is a direct effect of the failing social policies, the failing housing policies that we have in Quebec. And for tenants, and especially for tenants who have lower income, this has dramatic consequences throughout the province.
So we've spoken a little bit about Bill 31. Obviously, that's going to have a big impact if it is passed next month on Quebec tenants. But today, later today, the Housing Tribunal is expected to release the amounts by which it recommends that landlords can increase the rent on tenants in Quebec. Can you tell me more about what you at the RECLAC are expecting from this year's numbers and how that might affect tenants who will most likely in the coming months be receiving a notice from their landlord saying, hey, we're looking to raise your rent?
Well, what we're expecting is that it's going to be really high this year. Last year was, with the highest it was in 30 years. It was already really high. This year, we're expecting, given all the context and all the inflation rates, we're expecting that it may be at least at this level and probably higher. So, of course, in itself, this has big consequences for tenants because it's year over year of steep increases. And even if we're looking at the rates of the Tribunal Administratif du Logement, this can lead to pretty important raises. But the main problem is not those rates in themselves. The problem is every year the average rent increases go much higher than what is recommended by the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. When we look at the average increases that happened in 2022, throughout Quebec, we had a lot of cities where the average rent raised over 10%. So this is much higher than what is recommended by Tribunal Administratif du Logement. In fact, in 2022, it was over 30% of all Quebec cities that saw raises that went over 10%. And in Montreal and in the Montreal area, it was over 50% of all administrations that saw average increases over 10%. The problem is, even though the rates recommended are quite high, because they are only recommendations, and because there is no real form of rent control in Quebec, well, the average rent goes much higher, much faster than what is recommended by the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. So a lot of tenants are fearing consequences if they refuse the rent that is the raise that is proposed by their landlords. They fear being evicted. They fear being harassed by their landlords. So, a lot of them, even though if they know they can refuse the increase and still stay in their dwelling, well, a lot of them tend to accept raises that are going over what is recommended by the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. And also, a lot of people don't know that they can refuse and stay in their apartment. So we are in a context where everything is going in favor of the landlords and rent increases that are completely uncontrolled. So, of course, what we're asking for is a real rent control, but given it has been exploding in recent years, what the RECLAC is asking for as well is a rent freeze, an immediate rent freeze, in order to input a real rent control, including a rent registry, and also using the Tribunal Administratif du Logement's rate increase, making them mandatory instead of just a mere recommendation as they are right now.
Yeah, because right now the onus is always on the tenants in these cases to refuse. And then, you know, if you don't know, if you haven't been through the system before,
it can be quite intimidating to think I have to go in front of a tribunal against my landlord, who knows how the system works, who knows how to defend themselves. But, you know, for tenants who do find themselves in such a case, which I imagine that a lot of people are going to since inflation has been so high, what is the process and what is the likelihood of actually, I guess, winning a judgment at the tribunal if you do refuse a rent increase? Because from what I've been told, it's actually, you know, pretty simple. You can find all the forms online. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, well, it's pretty simple when you do it, but the problem is it's not necessarily presented that way by the landlord. The first thing is when you receive a rent increase notice as a tenant, is that you have to know that you can refuse. And if you refuse, you can stay in your apartment. And it's then, if you refuse, it's then up to the landlord to open a case at the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. So, of course, we're not saying that you as a tenant, you should just refuse any offer and not trying negotiating with your landlord. The first thing you should do is ask your landlord to justify the rent increase he is proposing, by using the grid that is used by the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. This is a pretty straightforward tool that is used by the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. It's available for everyone, so you can ask your landlord to use it to justify the rent increase. And if you're failing to get to a raise that is acceptable for everybody, well, then as a tenant, you can always refuse, stay in your apartment, and then it's up to the tenant, the landlord, to open a case at the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. Afterwards, of course, the Tribunal Administratif du Logement is going to use a grid with the percentage that they're going to publish today. In most cases, you have to check it out really thoroughly, because especially this year and last year, because the percentage were really high, you have to be careful to check if the raise that is proposed is really abusive. Even though it seemed quite high, it can be justified by what is recommended by Tribunal Administratif du Logement. But in most cases, when you receive a rent increase notice, it's going to be higher than what is recommended by Tribunal Administratif du Logement. So it's always in your interest to refuse what goes way over the top, because when you go at the Tribunal Administratif du Logement, they're going to rule not necessarily to something that is really interesting for you, but still it's going to be way less than what is usually proposed. It's always a good thing for a tenant to contact their local housing committee when they, whenever they have doubts about the rent increase, because the rates are pretty high these years. Sometimes you can look at the rent increase and it seems to be pretty high, but unfortunately, sometimes it's really close to what is recommended by the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. So whenever in doubt, of course, the first thing is to ask your landlord to justify the rent increase with the tool provided by the Tribunal Administratif du Logement. And then if you think that doesn't make sense, you can contact your local housing committee and never sign anything straightforward. Never accept anything straightforward. Whenever in doubt, contact your local housing committee. They can help you to see if the raise is justified.
Yeah, that's a good point, that you have the opportunity to sign a notice of rent increase and say, I have seen what you propose, but that's different from actually agreeing to it.
Yeah, it is, but we always recommend to not sign anything because sometimes so just signing the what is presented to you and your landlord is gonna say it's just to sign that you have to acknowledge that you have received the rent increase notice. But in some cases, it is used as something that is an acceptance of the rent increase. So you're not obliged to sign anything whatsoever. So we recommend not signing anything. We recommend that you answer your landlord. You answer your landlord in the appropriate delay, in the 30 days that is allowed. And when you are answering, we're also recommending that you make sure that your landlord is gonna see this notice, because unfortunately there's a lot of landlords that are using tactics to avoid receiving the answer. So the best thing is you can send a registered letter, and then the landlords will have to sign acknowledging that he has received it. But in any case, don't sign anything straightforward, even an acknowledgement of receiving the notice.
Okay, that is very good to know. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, as you said, you know, the local housing committees are all over Montreal, and they can let you know whether something is above board or if it's completely just way too much. So we will be paying attention to that, and I'm sure, tenants will too. So Cedric, thank you so much for chatting with me and walking me through all that today.
Thank you.
All right, we are back live in studio. It's 5:41 on Tuesday, January 23rd, and you're listening to the Local Journalism Initiative Roundup here on CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm your host, Jules, and I am playing some of the stories I've been working on at the station. In the past week or so, what you just heard was an interview with Cédric Dussault of the RECLAC. That's a group that brings together different housing committees and tenants' rights groups in the province to advocate on their behalf. And we were talking about a number of housing issues, including the new rent increase guidelines published by the TAL, which is Quebec's housing tribunal. Tenants will see a base increase of around 4%, but lots of landlords will ask for much more than that. So if you go to the TAL's website, you can learn your rights, know how, if you decide to refuse your rent increase, how to go about doing it. And there will be lots of campaigns by groups like the RECLAC and your local housing committee. So next up on the program, we are closing things off with an interview with Kira Prentice. Prentice is a law student here at McGill and one of the folks involved in last Monday's protest against the new Comité des Sages. That's a government committee at the provincial level that's going to take on questions of gender identity. But this is a committee that was put in place after a transphobic protest took place across the Canada, but including right here in Montreal. And so lots of people are understandably very worried. Now, some LGBTQ groups in the province will be consulting with the committee. That news has received pretty mixed reception among Montreal's queer community and Quebec's queer community at large. But the folks who are leading this committee are not people who have any experience on trans issues or have any kind of gender diversity or different gender identities themselves. They're three cisgender people. So we're going to be talking about all of that in this interview from last Tuesday. Take a listen. You're listening to CKUT, broadcast on 90.3 FM in Montreal and online worldwide at ckut.ca. I'm Jules Bijal. On Monday, Montrealers gathered outside the downtown Palais de Justice in protest of a new Comité des Sages, as it's being called in French. It's a committee on gender identity under the auspices of the Quebec CAQ government.
being put in place in response to a Canada-wide protest that happened this fall against gender-inclusive education and policies in children's schools. I was joined live in studio by one of the folks involved with Monday's protest to chat about this new gender identity committee and why it's so controversial. Here's our conversation.
Can you tell me more about this new Comité des Sages, as it's being called in French? Why is the provincial government looking into gender identity in the province, and what's the scope of this new committee's mandate?
So this so-called Committee of Wise Men was put into place after there was an anti-trans protests across the country on September 20th. So this seems to be an attempt to move this conversation from the streets and into Parliament so that they can have a little bit more say over what's going on with it.
It's not just the protest, right? Ever since this committee was announced last fall, people are concerned in it, especially trans folks, but queer organizations and individuals writ large in the province. Why is it that folks are so concerned about this council?
It seems to me and to many others that this council, this committee, has been put together to address the so-called trans question. They have gathered a panel of cis people, folks who have no ties to queer-friendly organizations or any expertise in the matter, and they've been tasked with deciding what should be done, or maybe with deciding what will be done in order to integrate trans people into Quebec society more broadly.
Yeah, and, you know, the committee, the CAC says it's made up of experts, right, who will consult with a number of civil society groups. Can you tell me more about the folks who are involved at both levels, both, you know, who's responsible for doing the consulting and the ones who are going to be consulted here?
So the committee members, there are three of them. There's Diane Lavallée, Jean-Bernard Trudeau, and Patrick Talion. They've been tasked to look over this issue, to provide some inquests, and to create a unified decision that the rest of the CAC government can sort of get behind, a position on this so-called trans question. As far as who they're working with this committee, who they're contacting, it's not me. It's not activists that I know. It's not people that I trust to represent my interests. It's other politicians and it's other elites with lobbying power.
Yeah. What message does it send to have the committee not include, you know, not just any trans people or any members of the queer community, but anyone with real expertise working on trans issues?
It says to me that this government has no intentions of supporting or uplifting a very vulnerable population, that instead they're trying to sidestep the issue and bureaucratize it so that they can point to this so-called committee and say, no, we did the thing, but without taking any of the steps that a reasonable person would expect in trying to address such a population. I think it speaks volumes that this committee was put together not because of trans activists trying to raise awareness about the ways that Quebec society and the Quebec government refuses to acknowledge and accommodate our existence, but this committee was created in direct response to a transphobic movement. And so I see this as a step to soften the rough edges on these anti-trans movements, try to politicize them, and try to frame trans identity, trying to frame my own identity as something that can and should be debated. And it's not a debate that starts from the point of, here are trans people, how do we uplift them, how do we help them? It's been a debate that starts from the point of, here is Quebec society, what concessions will we make in order to placate these trans activists?
You said that it came about as a result of a kind of anti-trans mobilization that happened here. Can you tell me more about that?
Mm-hmm. On September 20th of last year, across the country, there was a so-called Million March for Children. And this is part of a new resurgence of an old idea that is that we can rely on pearl clutching and rhetoric of child safety in order to attack marginalized groups. We saw the same thing last century as the gay rights movement started creating waves. We saw all sorts of backlash and efforts to label gay people as dangerous for children or as corrupting of children. And I think in many ways that fight has been lost. And so then the front has now changed. The new wedge issue that is being inserted into conservative politics all across the world is trans people. And we are used as a scapegoat so that the government, conservative governments, can point to something, can allude to a group of people who aren't well-established, who tend to not hold as much institutional power, and blame them for the failings of the government.
You know, the CAC has introduced this new committee to debate gender identity in the province, and then days later they announced that they were doubling the five-year funding for groups fighting homophobia and transphobia. So there seems to be, or at least trying to be, creating a separation between, you know, gender identity as it relates to children or these limit cases versus their support for trans rights, queer rights in the province. How do you find that separation? Do you find it to be convincing?
I mean, I'll never turn up my nose at money being invested in social services, but I think looking at that in isolation, this money would be dishonest. And when we consider the broader context of Quebec politics, especially all the ways that they've been pulling back on social services, I mean, there's a reason that we've seen record strikes in the last little while. There are all these ways that the government is failing, and so they hope that in throwing this money out, that that can provide a smokescreen to the things like the Comité de Sage itself being a smokescreen, if a poorly received one.
You know, stepping back a little, how do we make sense of the CAC's position here within the history of past governments? Like, you know, how typically or historically have Quebecers viewed queer and trans issues, and how does this government fall into line with that?
I found that Quebec tends to operate in a different milieu than perhaps the rest of Canada or Western countries, in that we see it tending more towards different sorts of populism. We know that the French identity is very important, but so is the lucidity of the province. Not to say how that has been being used to attack, but all this to set the stage that transness, as far as I understand, wasn't a culture issue, it wasn't a wedge issue until recently. And I see it being imported into Quebec as a transplant of ideas elsewhere. Thinking of the history, there was no reason that I would suspect that Quebec would take this this position. But I guess
it's a bit of a culture war issue generally now.
It's becoming that way. I see conservative politicians as not having a long-term plan, but rather in knowing what actions they can take, which will give them some immediate success, which might get them voted in the next election. But at the end of the day, they're playing with other people's lives for their own political clout.
Yeah, I'm wondering on that point whether you're seeing this new kind of discourse in your day-to-day life, or if you're hearing this from other trans folks. Like, you know, clearly it's not something that people were really thinking about until the past few years, and now the kind of growing concern over gender identity questions, you know, how is that actually playing out in people's day-to-day lives?
You know, I think for a long time, trans people were absent from public discourse, from the public zeitgeist. And now we're seeing at least greater visibility, which in one way I think is great. You know, oftentimes I'm the first and only trans people that people I meet have ever met and maybe will meet for a long time. But that doesn't mean that they don't have trans people in their communities. They maybe just don't know about them. But with this increased visibility comes increased acceptance, and then comes the fear that the buzzword that's being thrown around, the dog whistle rather, is social contagion. But I would liken this to the rise in left-handed people. When we stopped punishing people for being left-handed, we saw more left-handed people. And so now, as in many circles, trans identity becomes more accepted, embraced, and celebrated, we see more people feeling comfortable identifying as gender nonconforming. And this creates a fear in more conservative and older populations who think that this is a grand change in the world and that there must be a cause, when really it's just bigotry finally receding enough to give people space to be themselves.
You know, there was a protest yesterday. There's been counter protests in the fall against these anti-trans movements. You know, it can't feel good to always have to be on the defensive. If there are folks who are interested in being allies to trans people in the struggle, what are some ways that they can be of support?
I think the first thing I would encourage people to do is to learn a little bit about dog whistles, to learn which talking points, which at first glance might seem reasonable based on the climate we are, but on further inspection are just hateful rhetoric. This is things like parental rights, gender ideology, trans ideology. These are all ways of abstracting the issue, which is trans safety and liberation, and trying to shoehorn that question into a different box, a different procedure, so it can be attacked that way. Other things that people can do would be to learn about gender identity, not just for people in their lives that might be struggling with their own identity and hope that the people around them can provide support, but even for learning something about yourself, being able to critically analyze the gender roles that are put upon people, that people put upon themselves, and trying to parse the parts that they like from the parts that they don't so that they can live a more open and honest experience. And if everyone were to do this, there would be more space for all sorts of genders, identities, bodies, and orientations. And if you really want to go above and beyond, or rather to take firm positive steps to push back against a hateful status quo, join a protest, reach out to people, you know, make your opinions public and known and out there so that people around you can see the ideas that are popular, and so that people who hold bigoted ideas don't get the false impression that they are standing amongst other bigots.
All right. Well, Kira Prentice, thank you so much for coming on CQT to talk about all that.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Mark your calendar every last Tuesday of the month and tune in to a special series of Soul Perspectives on 90.3 FM.
Tuesday from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m.
Broadcasting live from West Haven Community Center in NDG.
Tune in to a special series of Soul Perspectives on 90.3 FM.
This Tuesday, January the 30th, we have special guests Zoo 365 Fitness, Sita Gabriel,
and DJ TJ.
Last but not least, West Haven Teens and the After School Program will be blessing us with a special segment.
So, don't forget, tune in every last Tuesday of the month.
Soul Perspective, live from West Haven Community Center. Tune in.
See you then.
This is a West Haven and CQT co-presentation.
All right, it is just before 6 p.m., and you've been listening to the Local Journalism Initiative Roundup here on CKUT. I'm your host, Jules, and I just want to remind you all that everyone who's interested in making news at the station is invited to come down this Thursday at 5 p.m., where Jack, our spoken word coordinator, and I are going to be hosting a little demo that's a production and also editorial workshop for folks who want to join our news collective that's currently being run by volunteer Sequoia Kim. So just a reminder, that's this Thursday at 5 o'clock.
All right, and that is it for our Local Journalism Initiative Roundup on CKUT. Thanks again so much for listening, and you can catch me next week, Tuesday at 5 p.m.
Funky. You are listening to Funky Revolution.
For your mind and for your hip, this is the Mothership's cassette archives, 25 years of funky revolutions. A chance to hear some of the musicians, interviews, and series that have marked 25 years of discovery on the flight of the Mothership with host Khalid. On this week's episode, Hip Hop Elements. First, an interview from September of 1995 with Rubadoid Band, featuring then a 13-year-old DJ A-Track and his brother Dave One. In a second part, two interviews, or at least parts of interviews, done with Chaos. First, in the spring of 2002 for his first album, Exit, and then an acoustic presence and interview in September of 2004 for his sophomore album, Joyful Rebellion. And to close out the show, Muzion,